into you and you sharing about this organization, who you're involved with, and then having them come and share with us, and we're the more blessed from having them coming and sharing. Mm-hmm. And we can't wait to have them again to come back and share. But it's through you, mm-hmm. how you channel through your channels, that you make things happen.
Yeah, that, like I said, I registered 1,700 people, and they heard about me knowing so many people could help them program. And I say, yeah, I can tell a lot of people about you guys. Mm-hmm. And that's good, because I love helping kids and seniors or whoever need to help, if I can help, mm-hmm. or tell them what resources that can help them.
Yeah, and we're sharing and talking about positive things. Mm-hmm. You know, we can always talk about the negative, and that would always be there. But to spotlight the positive things that youth are doing in this city of Champaign-Urbana is mm-hmm. amazing. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of youth are doing great things and mm-hmm. having a great impact. So big shouts out to Pastor Power, and we look forward to having you come back and share with us again. And again, we love you, Linda.
Okay.
God bless you. Thank you for coming and sharing with us. And the doors are always open for you. Anything else you want to share?
That's about it. I think I'm going to go get some food in my stomach, too.
I know that's right.
Remember to come to Pilgrim Church today at 2 o'clock. Celebration for Rashidi and Damien, the two young men that were killed, and the murders have not been solved yet.
Amen. Our prayers are that they will find the ones that done that. Who committed to murder, but at the same time show our prayers and love and support to the family on their behalf. This has been Power and Praise right here on 90.1 FM. Thank you for tuning in to WEFT.
Down the railroad track, it makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. Lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pal to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT, Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board.
And last week we talked about trails, and this week I'd like to continue that with some interjection. The Historic Museum advertised very well a walk, a city walk. The leader would be T.J. Blakeman, who is a city planner and very knowledgeable in the history of the city. I have looked at a lot of the historical aspects of Champaign, and he's knowledgeable and speaks well. So the museum had advertised two field trips, one at 10 o'clock and one at 1 o'clock. Both were very well attended. I think there'd probably about 50 people in each situation, which means that you have to have more than your own voice to do that. So TJ had not only the qualifications, but he has a reasonably loud voice, which is very helpful, but amplified with a lavalier. And he had flip book with pictures of sites that you would walk by, and this is what they looked like in the past. So having been to a trail conference, I was picking up tips that were flowing back and forth in workshops on this sort of thing. So I would like to look at this as a very successful field trip. But how do you organize it? How do you do your field trip if it's along the highway? If it's a prairie field trip, how do you handle probably an unexpectedly large audience? I can remember being in Brownfield Woods once when I thought I'd have about 10 people at a field trip, and it ended up about 100. So you ended up standing on a stump and trying to shout, and you need to be prepared for that sort of thing. Not always do our things turn out to be successful. And that's part of what I found at the conference. A lot of the people that I was sharing with, and they were sharing with others, was that you need to have a biodiversity of items that you work with. You need to try all sorts of things and assume that some of them won't work. You're not always sure what will work. You have some ideas. It is very, very helpful to have other people involved because they come up with ideas that you don't expect. Sometimes they come up with ideas that you know about from other situations. But these sorts of field trips add together. There's been a long time historical society in Champaign County. There was a historical museum but it on University Avenue, but it lost out, as we are losing out on museums all around. The Chanute Air Force Base Museum is closed out, and the items are being distributed across the country. But that's quite a loss to this community. We have to think about how we work with a historical museum which currently is closed. It will come back as the Cattle Bank in probably a not too far distant future. But this field trip or walk was designed to encourage community input. And what you're looking for is not necessarily 150 people on one day. It's more like you're looking for the six people who we will be come back and be committed and work with this in the future. So the field trip started at the Cattle Bank. The Cattle Bank is on University Avenue and 3rd Street. It, for most of you who have been around for a while, it was a little drugstore for a long time, and it had a fire, so then it closed for a while, and the what was left of the historic museum on University Avenue came to the Cattle Bank. There was restoration, and there have been regular events people like Sue and Bruce Woods have been involved fairly heavily. They had a director who passed on with cancer, so it's not easy to do this sort of stuff. And so I was very pleased to go to that field trip on Saturday. And so many people, many of whom I knew, and to listen to the commentary that was provided by TJ, who is now president of that historic group. And we hope that his energy and his excitement about the history of Champagne will infuse to others and encourage the cattle bank to reopen. And it may even be that they have so many artifacts that they have to warehouse some of this stuff somewhere. But the walk also had a relationship to the city meeting on Tuesday night, which will deal with two plots of land that are north of Champaign Main Street. There's what used to be the Flatiron Building, which was removed, but it's the confluence of the Illinois Central Platte and the Jeffersonian Platte. The Jeffersonian Platte being north, south, east, and west. So Neal Street is on the Jeffersonian Platte. University Avenue is on the Jeffersonian Platte. Walnut Street and Market Street are on the Platte that is Illinois Central Platte. So Illinois Central was given land to put in the railroad. The railroad came in the 1850s, and probably before the Jeffersonian Platte was completed. I'm not quite sure about that. So what are we looking for in a field trip of this nature? We would like someone with a loud and fairly rehearsed voice. TJ obviously knew the locations very well, had taught them well. You can't expect a lot of input from people in this case, but he had lined up historians who had different specialties. Bruce Hannon was there. I forget the name of the person who is a theater specialist, but he was there and could add commentary. If you are going to have a field trip to this place and involve the audience especially, you need a lavalier that is attached to your head. He didn't have that. He had a lavalier attached to his collar, which means that when you turn your head to ask some person to input a theater comment or something like that, then the audience doesn't hear the relationship because the lavalier stays in the one position and your head turns to the side. But those types of lavaliers are common. They're sometimes used by singers. They're these days very small, and they can be inconspicuous. But as the singer turns ahead, the lavalier moves with it. If you need audience participation, or if you need a backup specialist to add a comment, then you can probably provide a batteried speaker, or perhaps another lavalier. Okay. What other things are you looking for in a field trip? You're looking for excitement, and TJ has excitement, and covers it flows to your audience. And over again at the meeting I was at, were discussing various states. If the governor of the state of Michigan or Missouri or Pennsylvania or wherever is really interested in trails, then that trails will work. Now, we're not in that sort of situation in Illinois at the moment, but it trickles down to cities and counties, and if you are going to do historic preservation, and if you are thinking of taking that huge parking lot that's south of Packer and north of the News Gazette and developing hotels and other facilities, then you need to have something that's far beyond your local level. But the local level is a very good starting place. In this case, we're looking at our own trails that start in Danville and in Decatur and Clinton, and those trails can bring economic development. But far beyond the economic development, they bring societal development. They bring more and more we're having people who are not just going from A to B. They want to go from A to some spot in the middle of that and find out about the statue or the railroad museum or the mineral waters or the coal that I was seeing when I traveled Route 6 parallel to Route 80, which is kind of sterile, but Route 6 is alive with stories that people have. So to have an enthusiastic a leader, to have good information, to have it organized, to have sites that you can get to, sometimes you need a space where the audience, who, in this case, a lot of the people that were there had stories of their own, but they were very kind. They knew that this was a limited walk, and you didn't interject into that. But a spot where you can sit and communicate, so these people can talk to each other, is good. Instance, Ragbri in Iowa. Ragbri is a sort of a bicycle tour across the state, but a hotel that we visited had made it a point of making space for a bicycle workshop and also hotel accommodation. And that allowed people to talk to each other, to experience what they had seen with a high bridge or whatever. So sometimes a small stopover is important, because that group of 50 people can't necessarily talk to each other after a comment is made. It's good to have a site where you can rumble around for a little while, but that's more for sort of a longer a day field trip. This was just 2 hours, and it went very quickly. I want to add a few more comments. The fact that it was advertised well in the News Gazette was good. There's just having an organization that's behind it. So that's enough about trails in general, but I do worry about the overall regional planning for trails between the various counties that we're in East Illinois. We even mentioned last week a 6,000-acre prairie in the middle of a cornfield, and I'm not sure that's going to happen in East Central Illinois, but that sort of possibility is there and is off the Highway 80. It's on the old routes, like 74 to Danville, like 72 to Decatur, like 10 to Clinton, like 45 to Kankakee. We look for all of the interesting things that are 10 miles on either side of the road. There will still be the athletes that want to get from A to B, but there are also the people who will want to have a drink here and go to four spots along the Ragbri and find an interesting motel that they can stay at, and then find that the facilities in that street, that area, are labeled so that in this case there's many people that haven't taken this walk, but if you had a walk established with signs that people could see, it would be very helpful, and you could do your own walk. It wouldn't be quite so voluminous, but a little handout would be helpful. And sometimes a handout is tremendously helpful. If people are interested, they can go home and read. And that's also important for children. Sometimes the children are educating their parents. And just a simple brochure that you can put in your pocket. And not something big that you sort of have to destroy to fold up to put in your pocket. But something that is easy to handle is a rather helpful tool that lasts out there for a while and may just get handed around. If it's on the internet, that's also helpful. In this case, the whole plan for doing things in the area north of Champaign is associated, and that is on the web, so you can go to champaign.gov and get that. So field trips don't just happen by themselves. Okay, we're going to start off with the cattle bank. Mm-hmm. The cattle bank, we will drop pictures in for you here with our Banner Public Television and with YouTube, so expect to see some pictures. So I'll talk enough about each site so that you will be able to see a picture. We started the cattle bank, and it was there because in the 1850s, early 1850s, before there was even railroad, there was a need for people who were growing cattle to know that people who were buying cattle for the Chicago trade and other places, the horses would even get spooked because there were people who would like to take the cash that was traveling on the horse. So it was important to have a bank where you didn't have to necessarily carry a lot of cash. So the Harris family was involved with this to a large extent, and I forget a lot of the names that are involved, but TJ knows the names and can relate and tell you how long it lasted. The bank didn't last for that long, but it was handy while it was there, but it was one of the first buildings in Champaign. Champaign is Champaign because Champaign was in Champaign County, Ohio, and Urbana was in Ohio, in Champaign County. So people moved across the country. They would move from New York to Ohio to Champaign, Illinois. The railroad went through Champaign, probably because of the topography, maybe a little bit because the small towns that were established before railroads came didn't always want a huffing-puffing train to come through and leave its soot and coal and whatever there. So sometimes the railroads went through in a different place. Sometimes the railroad was put in and the town that was away from the railroad moved, like if you're in Homer. Homer has been moved from its original location on the Sangamon, on the Salt Fork River, to Homer. So we had Champaign County, And then there was West Urbana, because you had the courthouse and the elements of a town in Urbana, but this was a new town that was going to grow up around the railroad. And by about 1860, West Urbana became Champaign and had its own jurisdiction. DJ said a little bit about that, and then we do in the future have bankers, and most of the Trevitts and Mathises, the people who leave their names on the local streets, were the people who set up banks that were bigger and more influential than the cattle bank, but the cattle was functional. The next stop was on the railroad. The railroad exists now, and there we have glacial till and dirt that was removed from Paxton. Paxton has a really high moraine, so you go through Paxton now, you go through a cutting, and the cutting is, you don't really see around it, but that cutting, the soil came down to Champaign and created underpasses so that at that time, this is probably about 1924, the traffic was being held up by about 30 trains a day. And so they moved the railroad line up just on the east side of the present railroad depots and made underpasses, and even the interurbans and walkways went under the railroad, and that's as it is today. The original railroad was on the west side of the present railroad station, so you have a 1919 railroad station, you have the Black Dog Saloon, in an older railroad station that was on the site of the 1919 railroad station, but was moved north so that the new railroad station could be built in, I think, about 1919 is right. So we moved on to take a look at the two railroad stations that are there. There used to be a dome house, which was the center for activities that were railroad. It burned in the long run, but TJ had a picture of that, and that was helpful. I don't know how you do this otherwise, but the pictures were fairly small, so you didn't get to see too much. But I was thinking that somehow we could have an assistant who would hold up a bigger picture, but the bigger picture would cost, you know. So there's a limit to what you can do, and this was very good. So the railroad moved down past what used to be Verina's on Main Street, and down in front of on the west side of the Mass Transit building, or MTD, and then went over a bridge over Logan Street and then on south. You very rarely take a railroad and put it in a new place and then remodel the old place and put it back to the old place. The cost is too great. So that meant that the railroad is on the other side of the original railroad line. It's on the east side of the railroad station. MTD built on that railroad. So we have some steel that is from that railroad, little pieces, and that's sort of a historic monument. Eventually that will find its way to the museum if it has the capacity to hold that sort of information. It's heavy and it has to be explained. And that means that you'd have to have people who have that sort of knowledge. Next stop was to look at the old interurban building. And it was explained that's right at the end of, if you go down Market Street, you can see the interurban Illinois Power, founded by McKinley. McKinley was on, had was eventually the senator. He died in as a senator. And but if you look, you can see where two types of trains. There was a bigger car that was an interurban that would go between here and Monticello and St. Louis. And you could get there, but you'd take a long time to get there because it stopped fairly regularly. It wasn't an express train. And then there were the little cars that ran around town that were sort of like trolleys that moved between Champaign and Banner and back. But that building is there. Next stop was looking at the city building. The city building is a Flatiron building, and it has all the symbology of the Jeffersonian Platte and the other Platte coming together. At one stage, West Side Park was going to be the city square. It didn't happen, but it turned into a park. But there were pictures of the original park with all its trees in native setting. So the city building used to be a small building. Many of the buildings in downtown Champaign were wooden, so they burned when it got dry in winter and you had heating often the burn, so there were fires regularly. The fire department was in the city building. You can see the spaces that were there for trucks to go in and out onto University Avenue. You can see where the police department was there. The, I can remember actually reporting to a situation where I was involved in somebody's a theft occurring, and the situation was handled in the basement of the city building, which faces onto University, onto Neal Street, and onto that little street behind it. Next stop was on Neal Street, and you have to be reminded that at one stage there was a move afoot nationally to put in malls on main drags because the people would be attracted to come to a mall. That worked a little bit, but it often caused a blockage, and in this case, Neal Street was blocked off, and if you know the streets in downtown Champaign, that meant that people coming off of something like 72 would come south on Neal Street and then have to go waddle through other streets around this mall. Didn't work very well, and so it took $1 million to put it in and $1 million to take it out. So that discussion was there. But there's also the building that the Lewis family had across the way, which burned and then was replaced. There used to be an Oddfellows building there, too. It's now, all that area is owned by Busey Bank. We walked up that street and across to the Virginia Theater and discussed it and who created it. And the Park District owns it, and it's very popular for quite a lot of different venues now, including Ebert Fest, which if you are interested, you can get tickets to the April Ebert Fest right now. We went on to the West Side Park, and there is the view of the a prayer for rain. There's a statue in the middle, and in summertime it has water and has fountains, and There's a whole history to that. There's a gazebo, which is not quite as original as the original gazebo, because the original had toilets in the bottom that often became a problem. So now park districts tend to assume that you will use your toilet at home, and there will be enough park places that are near to home that you can not necessarily have to have a toilet in the park itself. Yeah. So, but the gazebo is there in a reconstruction. There's University Avenue. There's some of the houses that belong to families that were original. There's a funeral home there. There were churches. The churches are still there. The Burnham Anthonyum is there. And so the crowd moved from the center of the park to the Presbyterian and Methodist Church corner. I remember coming to the States, and one of the first things I could not understand was that the Methodist Church had been modernized so that you had a modern facade looking onto Church Street, and there were gargoyles up above, and it seemed to be a strange thing to have that sort of, those sort of almost plastic concrete fronts compared with a gargoyle which goes back to pagan days. And those symbols are still there. But there's a pragmatism to this, so you have to understand that. Coming along a little further, you get to the Springer post office, and there was a post office converted to a park district center for art and dance and all manner of things. You can't go in the front door, really, because it's not easy to access that way. You access it through the back door. But, Tolson, who was the park district manager, did a lot of work to get that facility organized, and also the Virginia Theater and gardens around. So in Iowa, I was encountering a retired post office that became a library, and then the library went somewhere else, and there was this empty building for a number of years. And so someone who had the gall to decide to request, put in a request to the library for $1 to buy the building and put it into a community center. It happened, and the board approved. And these are the sort of things you look for, you don't expect, and it's amazing when it happens, but it often does happen. We looked at the Robeson building. It was all steel, built in World War I, I think. But at least when it was built, steel was not readily available. But a lot of people used to attend events on the roof of the Robeson building. The Robeson family is still very much around, and they do a lot of things in Rantoul and Southwest Champaign, Robeson Parks, like, and they are on boards and foundations that help to do interesting things in this community. Come a little bit further and you come to the theater area. You come to the art theater, which used to be the Buck Theater. And There was a gentleman involved that was involved with sports, and he owned most of the theaters. And but he tied on Red Grange and managed to help save the soul of the National Football League. So people don't know these things, but it's kind of fun when they find out. And the guy involved, I think, was Miller. I'm not sure about that, but so there are personalities, and so there was a Regency Theater. There was a little bit further along, there was an Orpheum Theater. A little bit further down on Main Street, there was a theater that's now the Hideup. And so we discussed that, and the theater specialist chimed in with his knowledge. There's one theater you wouldn't even recognize, but I think it was the Rialto. It's sort of sandwiched between the Robeson Building and the, now the new hotel that's up on the corner there. And it's occupied by a photographer, but it still has its sloping mezzanine, or whatever you call it, for projection of pictures, could be used in that way. The Art Theater has now become the only co-op theater in the country, and it's working that way. It has been everything from a porno theater to other different venues, and encouraged to some extent by Roger Ebert's film festival, which often spills over into the Art Theater. On the corner of Main and Church, two streets come together and get different names. There was a discussion of the Willis Building, which became the Grant Building, which had a fire, and then became developed as a there's a restaurant and outside seating there, and there's a sculpted piece which has been there for ever. It was a sort of centerpiece sitting in front of the Flatiron Building, which ran north between Neil and I think it's Hickory, or that runs down towards the Orpheum. Rather unique building, and I think people are rather sorry that it got turned down and became a parking lot. It was an attempt to save Sears. Sears was located there, and eventually Sears and Penny's went north to the mall, and Champaign became somewhat of a dead central business district. That's how we got to come here. The Ford buildings on this street were empty, in effect, when we came. So the rental was low, and we could have purchased for a very low amount. Now gentrification has come back, and some of those people have come back from the mall. We don't necessarily have all the facilities. You would hope to have biodiversity in downtown Champaign, but we have a lot of bars. We don't have a lot of hardware stores or dress shops, or you might have a boutique, but there's not a total balance, but it's happening. And that's what's part of this, what the city is about, is to try and generate a downtown center that has hotels, and I hope that there's a continuing relationship to groups like the Packer Preservation and Conservation Association, which is on the Washington Street end of this. There's the potential for the co-op having a leg coming from Urbana to Champaign on the corner of Washington and Walnut. There's the vegetable gardens that have been given interimly to the North End community just north of the railroad line there. So I'm sort of hoping that when development occurs here, and it's sort of talked about for perhaps $95 million involved here, and that's what the meeting on Tuesday will be about, is for the city to decide if it wants to develop that parking lot in front of the Orpheum Theatre and the Children's Museum, or if it wants to, and or if it wants to take the plot that's on north of the News Gazette and south of Packer Building, on the west side of Walnut, and I think the other street behind what used to be Sears was Fremont or something like that. And so what would you picture there? If you were putting in a hotel, would you have a hotel that's very fancy? I was in Iowa just recently, and if I wanted to stay an extra day, it was going to cost me $210. So I stayed at a Motel 6 for $40. Mm-hmm. But that means you have to travel out of town. So how do we relate more broadly to motels, hotels on 74, 72, 45, 150? There's a balance here. So how do people that might be going to Packer and to the co-op stay in downtown if they would want to in a reasonably priced hotel? Okay, so we're at the corner of Main and Church, and we're looking in the distance to the Orpheum Theatre and the children that is housed as Children's Theatre. They've taken a facade off the front of the building and returned it to its original things. It has a kiosk at the front, so that you know where the Orpheum is, a little bit like the kiosk in front of the Virginia Theater, only a little simpler. Come along and look at Penny's. The Penny's has been clad with News Gazette took it over, but the original building is there, has been clad with granite from Italy. And so it's got a sort of fancy facade to it. Across the road, a couple of buildings have been taken down. There's Kaufman Building, and there was a building that was occupied by the Scholem family, and they. The urns on top of the roof, the elements of history are there, but that area has lost some of its buildings. So how do you infill here and provide facilities for parking or banking, drive-through banking? On the north side of the road where the Penny's is, between Penny's and New Street, there was a huge complex which included the Grant Building, and that burned. And the Champaign Arts Council had a building on the third floor, and in the fire I could see a grand piano sitting up there about to be destroyed. Come along further and you get to the First National Bank. Grandiose front piece, and was a major bank. And I think the Harris family was involved, and it had a very fancy inside. It's been remodeled, but some of the tables and facilities are still in town and can be exhibited in places like other banks if there's a willingness. So some of this sort of development depends on other people having ideas and how they could express. The building that was added onto that rather palatial building was very much a modern building and doesn't really relate to the older building. Across the road is there's a building that's owned by Dr. Youngerman, which will be is being developed by the Nito family. and will be a bar that will open shortly. And that is an older building. It has taken off any facade, and the front has an I-beam that simulates the first I-beams being put in by communities that used only could have narrow sites because their beam across the front would have to a wooden beam. Once they found I-beams, then the I-beam could extend the width of shop fronts, and it would relate to cast iron panels that would actually be a part of the structure of the building. And so you can see that in, I think it's called the Empire Building on the corner. Across the way is one of the oldest buildings in Champaign. It's a building that houses the drum shop, and you can look at it side on to see that it has a window structure that is rather old but still used. And then there's the Kuhn family. Dr. Youngerman is the son of his father, who was a surgeon and ear, nose, and throat doctor, and his son Bill is similar. And Bill's done a lot to preserve some of these areas. His family built the Kuhn store, and that's on the north side of Main Street, Church Street having changed to Main Street. And then across the way is the Lincoln Building, which has been designed for attorneys in about 1919, and still has a lot of attorneys in it, but also the artists have moved in there. And on the fourth and fifth floor, there are a number of artists. You come along a little further to Market Street, which is kind of the bad boy alley of Champaign. You would come to town, and you perhaps would stay in the Inman Hotel, which I passed off. It's sort of at the end, near to the interurban McKinley Illinois Power depot for trains or interurbans. But all along Market Street there were bars and places that where people enjoyed themselves, and it was set on the seedy side of Champaign near the railroad. You had a livery stable, now part of the News Gazette. It had four stories, but the top two stories were breaking down some, and Mr. Kuhn was nearly hit on the head by a piece of falling rock, so the top two floors were taken off. So the harness factory is now a News Gazette facility that is only two stories. Then we were back at another theater. It's now the High Dive, and I forget what the name of it was, but it has been everything from a porno studio to a church to now a bar, and a rather successful bar. Yeah. The trip wound up outside the Black Dog Saloon, which is the old railroad station. And TJ accepted questions and walked with people to the cattle bank. And I had asked if he might be on this program today, partially because I was interested that something should be said about the plots of land north of the News Gazette and the Flatiron area on Neal Street, I thought, but you know, Sunday is a difficult time to have people come. So we often, as community development people, often are denied the opportunity to have people to speak on Saturday and Sunday. The feedback that I got on Tuesday when we were there, much greater than I get on the weekend. And you also have to realize that people like ourselves have to be out and about on the weekends. There are also X number of very active other community affairs on Saturday and Sunday, so your listening public is very small. And we don't have a Nielsen rating on this, but it's important to have biodiversity in your public relations, because certain people can handle certain days, but the idea is to infuse your information across the week, across the spectrum, and across music. So we have those sorts of debates with WEFT, and that's interesting. It's going on at the moment, and Sandra Alton is working to try and figure out how WEFT fits into the public various genres of music and other things, and WEFT is asking for your input at this time, and we wish that you would be able to do that. In there somewhere is Folk and Roots, which is still running this weekend. And David, do you have any input for them? You sometimes do a harmonica workshop.
And as a matter of fact, I got to do that. As I was mentioning yesterday at the workshop, that the Folk and Roots has been going on now for 7 years, and for all 7 years I've gotten to teach this harmonica workshop, and I had just about 20 people yesterday crammed
in. You give out mouth organs too.
I'm sorry?
You give out harmonica.
Exactly. Basically, I've made this great arrangement with the Folk and Roots people. They put up the money for a bunch of harmonicas, and Chorus and Music, which is right there in downtown Urbana, gives us a really good discount on the harmonicas. They're very introductory level. And so we had 20 harmonicas to give away to about 20 folks who came in there yesterday, and we spent a couple of hours. The first hour you spend kind of just playing folk music and teaching people the basics of how to play single notes on the harmonica. And then the second hour continued that, talked a little bit about do's and don'ts of harmonicas in general. And then we finished the second hour talking about the blues and how you can take the standard folk song harmonica, how you can play the same instrument and make folk songs on it. And then if you just play it slightly differently, start out a different note on the harmonica, suddenly you're playing the blues. And it's all the same set of 10 holes on the harmonica. And it's all in the way that you... it's where you start the instrument. And I think everyone finished by believing what I'd say several times during the 2 hours, that it is such a simple instrument, everybody can learn how to play the harmonica because all the notes are in the correct key. You can't play a note that's in a different key from the key of that harmonica. So, yeah, I had a great time, and I actually got to go and listen to a couple of other things as well. There are all these great jams. All these performers in the community get together during this week, and they play bluegrass, and then comes blues and a bunch of other things.
Are there any things that are special this afternoon?
I'm afraid. I think it's done now. I looked at the schedule. It ended last night. John Gorko is in town, and he played over at the Iron Post, and that was it for the... While there was stuff earlier before the weekend, there were things already on Thursday and Friday, but my understanding is that, yeah, today there's nothing. Everything has been packed up.
Those are the sorts of community activities that really make a difference. So if we're thinking about Danville, Decatur,